Now, is there anything cuter than a small bear cub with its head in the air sniffing away? I don't think so. Well, we've got to the episode I've teased previously. We're going to talk about sun bears and Borneo. There is a place in the remote northwoods of Minnesota, North America. It's located near the town of Orr, population approximately 300. Outside of this town is an area where normal rules are put to one side. It's a place where humans and wildlife meet. It's a special place, wholly unique and not without its controversies. This is the Vinschuti Wildlife Sanctuary, run by the American Bear Association, ABA for short. The ABA is dedicated to promoting a better understanding of black bears and all wildlife through education, observation, and experience. I'm your host, Philip Stubley, and welcome to the Bear Den. So, I've been looking forward to this episode for a while, as we're going to talk about sun bears, a bear that is very near and dear to me, as there are many individual bears I've been lucky to help improve welfare conditions for, introduce enrichment programs, help build, design and build new enclosures for, and that's not to mention rehabilitate orphan cubs, some of which were returned to the wild. So we're going to cover a lot this episode. We're going to focus mainly on sun bear rehabilitation. I'll kind of go through the process and then talk about what I did. We'll also hear about other aspects of sun bears in subsequent episodes. So consider yourself warned. There's going to be a lot of scene setting here as I talk about how I ended up in Indonesia and then provide some context for sun bears and the organizations and the general situation in Indo. And then we'll talk about fun bear stuff and just how amazing the rainforest is. So this all started around about 2017 when I was looking for something bear related to do while the North American black bears were all in their dens for the winter. And so I stumbled across a couple of ads on a volunteer site relating to sun bears in Borneo. And this was at a place called Orangutan Foundation International, aka OFI, or OFI. So I sent off an email and actually heard back, which I didn't expect if I'm honest. So after several Zoom interviews, I was told I had one last call to make to the president and founder of OFI, Dr. Barute Galdikas. Now at this point, I didn't really know who she was, but she's kind of a big deal. She's a fascinating and complex lady who, along with orangutans, deserves her own podcast series. But I'll try and give a general overview of who she is. Dr. Galdikas is one of the Trimates, so that's alongside Jane Goodall and Diane Fossey. Way back in like the 50s, 60s, paleoanthropologist Louis Leakey selected Jane Goodall to study chimpanzees, Diane Fossey to study gorillas, and Barute Galdikas to study orangutans. I am going to refer to Dr. Galdikas as Dr. G, as she's widely known. So Jane Goodall is still today a fierce advocate for animals, and Diane Fossey was sadly killed in Rwanda in 1985, but is immortalized in the Sigourney Weaver movie Gorillas in the Mist. And Dr. G first went out to Indonesia, to Borneo, in 1971, and has been there ever since, even featuring on the cover of National Geographic. She established the research site known as Camp Leakey in Tanjung Puting National Park. This park covers about a 416,000 hectare area, and Camp Leakey is the heart of the ongoing orangutan study area, and this is one of the longest running studies of its kind in the world. Nowadays, visitors can go into the park, normally via houseboat, and see wild and wild-born ex-captive orangutans in their natural habitat. And Dr. G has worked tirelessly in the field of orangutan research and conservation. She spent many turbulent years in the heart of the jungle, battling everything from disease, animal attacks, and even kidnapping, to create a protected area for this shy primate species. Relevant to us, in the 1990s, the Orangutan Care Centre and Quarantine Facility was set up, where orphaned orangutans are brought for rehabilitation to release back to the wild. This is located in the village of Pasir Panjang. If you want to know more about this, you can read Dr. G's memoir, Reflections of Eden, to find out more about her initial years in Borneo. For me, I'm kind of glad I wasn't really aware of all of this beforehand, as I probably would have been quite nervous about meeting such a towering figure. As it was, we talked about all sorts of eclectic topics, including bears, religion, and history. And after that, I was eventually invited to make preparations, book my flights, and I was off to Indonesia. Little did I know, it was the start of a years-long and still continuing journey. I'm ever grateful to Dr. G for the opportunities I've been presented with, and it's been life-changing. So Indonesia is a country in Southeast Asia, made up of approximately 17,000 islands, including ones you may have heard of, such as Java, Sumatra, Borneo, and the tourist hotspot Bali. Borneo is the third largest island in the world and is split between three countries. So that's Brunei, Malaysia, and Indonesia. And Indonesian Borneo is referred to by the locals as Kalimantan. The rainforest in Borneo is one of the oldest in the world and is estimated to be about 130 million years old. Alongside orangutans, there are the endemic proboscis monkeys with their characteristic big noses, which are only found in Borneo. At the time of recording, Jakarta is the capital of Indonesia, but there are preparations to move it to East Kalimantan, to a newly built capital called Nusantara. Indonesians are very friendly and welcoming people, and some of my favourite Indonesian dishes include nasi goreng, translated as fried rice, and gado-gado, which is a warm vegetable salad with peanut sauce and usually loaded with tofu. And whilst I was living there, I discovered tempeh, which I still eat all the time now. Tempeh, it originates from Indonesia and is a fermented soybean product that's kind of like tofu, but has a bit more bite to it and is full of proteiny goodness. So moving on, I arrived in Indonesia, and after 10 days of acclimating in Java, I flew into Borneo, into the city of Pangkalan Bun, and arrived at my homestay in the village of Pasir Panjang, not far from the orangutan care centre. I really didn't know what to expect. I mean, German film director Werner Herzog once described the jungle as a harmony of overwhelming and collective murder. Now, I wouldn't go that far, but the rainforest is so full of life, and there are bits of it that aren't too amenable to you, such as tree sap that can burn you, or spiky branches and flowers. But it's such an immersive experience, and it's something, like, just being surrounded by all the noise is something I miss when I'm not there. Over the years, I've had several encounters with venomous snakes in the forest, including black-necked spitting cobras, Bornean pit vipers, and my favourite, the Malayan coral snake, with this red head and tail, and beautiful blue and black colouring on its body. I remember spotting one while out on a forest walk with a bear and thought, ooh, that's beautiful, I better steer clear. Later, when I was talking with one of the locals and described it, he told me that in the local language, they referred to it as Ular Tanggal Baju, which roughly translates as snake that you throw your shirt at. But we are getting ahead of ourselves. My first day at the care centre was when I met many of the bears that you'll hear about in this episode and subsequent ones. The care centre is primarily an orangutan centre, but at the time also housed other rescued animals such as gibbons, macaques, binturong and sun bears. Sun bears in the local language, Bahasa Indonesia, are known as Bruang Madu, which translates as honey bear. They were given this nickname, surprisingly, due to their love of honey. So before we get into it properly, let's have a little overview of sun bears. Sun bears, Latin name Helarctus melanus, are found throughout Southeast Asia. Some top facts about them are that they are the most arboreal, i.e. tree-dwelling, bear species, and they are the smallest of all eight extant bears, but they have the longest tongue out of all bear species. Now this is a whopping 12 inches, or 25 centimetres. And something else as well, some bears also have the longest canine teeth relative to skull size among bears, so in fact their canines don't actually differ in size from those of polar bears, despite their body mass being 5 to 10 times smaller. I remember one thing that got me when I went back to the Vinshuti Sanctuary in 2019 after being in Borneo for over a year was how much bigger black bears' ears are than sun bears. Sun bear ears are so small. But sun bears' claws are much bigger than American black bears. They're long and sickle-shaped and up to 4 inches or 10 centimetres. And that's compared to North American black bears that have short and curved claws at less than 2 inches or 5 centimetres. Another difference to black bears is that due to the tropical climate, sun bears have no need for hibernation, as food is available year-round. Sun bears' distinctive chest patches range from yellow, cream, and orange in colour, and each chest patch is as unique as a fingerprint. They're tough, tenacious, and mercurial creatures. They have short hair and loose skin, which comes in handy if a predator, such as a tiger in Sumatra, attacks them from behind. They can roll out of harm's way and put up a fight. And as said before, sun bears are great at climbing and are rarely seen in the wild. They're normally not aggressive towards people, but people have been attacked during sudden encounters with sun bears, including a few where injuries were fatal. In Indonesia, sun bears that are found on the island of Sumatra are bigger than the ones found on the island of Borneo. Bornean sun bears are actually classed as a subspecies. But no matter the size, sun bears provide a great service to the rainforest as they are seed dispersers. So when they eat fruits and poop these out, it allows more fruit to grow elsewhere. Sun bears are listed as vulnerable on the IUCN Red List, and there is no adequate data on population. Being classed as vulnerable means sun bears could become extinct in the wild in 30 years, or 3 generations. They are one of the least studied bears, with research on them only really beginning in the 1990s by people like Dr. Gabriella Fredrickson. Gabriella is a conservation biologist, and she actually has her own conservation education centre in East Kalimantan, which I can recommend visiting if you're in the area. She was also one of the first, to my knowledge, to rehabilitate and release sun bears back to the wild, and I adopted her release methods. More coming up on that. Sun bears are certainly one of the most threatened bear species. Threats include poaching, hunting, and loss of habitat due to deforestation. Other reasons sun bears are killed include medicinal beliefs, exotic food, fear, they're killed to prevent crop damage near villages, and mothers are killed so young cubs can be sold on the illegal wildlife trade. Sun bears have been a completely protected species in Indonesia since 1973. It is prohibited to catch, injure, kill, keep, possess, care for, transport, or trade protected species, whether alive or dead. Violation of the law carries heavy fines and jail time, but people still do it anyway. So, to reiterate, at the moment, deforestation and habitat loss are two of the biggest threats as land is cleared to make way for humans and for palm oil plantations. This land clearing uses a slash-and-burn method where crops are cut down and burned before planting new seeds. The problem here is that these can lead to out-of-control fires that plague Indonesia every year. For instance, in 2019, Indonesia was featured in the news due to devastating forest fires that have been compared to the fires in the Amazon. And I guess it's as good a time as any to talk about palm oil. Palm oil is a vegetable oil that is used in practically everything you may find in a shop, from shampoo, chocolates, and lipstick. Even Oreos contain palm oil. The price tag, however, is extremely high. Now please do your own research and come to your own conclusions. From personal experience, specifically with quote-unquote Big Palma in Southeast Asia, I haven't seen anything to convince me that, for now, the way palm oil produced there is sustainable. Every hour, the equivalent of 300 football fields of forest is cleared to make way for more palm oil plantations. And since the 1970s, 30% of the Bornean rainforest has been lost, taking all the flora and fauna with it, including orangutans and sun bears. Not only is a whole ecosystem being lost, but these rainforests act as carbon sinks, and with their destruction, more and more carbon is released into the atmosphere, polluting the earth. This is going on at an unsustainable rate. And it's not just animals that suffer, as people are also exploited, as workers' rights are routinely ignored and child labour is employed. Now this is all sounds big and scary, but there are ways to tackle this. Making ourselves more aware of the situation is a good start, and being more responsible goes a long way to making an impact. Buying palm oil-free products helps send a message to big companies that unsustainable practices are unacceptable. So, I mean, I'm always reading labels when I go shopping. It takes me forever to get a shop in. There are alternatives out there, and I do appreciate that alternatives like soybean use up more land than palm oil, so it's a bit of a minefield. Consuming only what you need and being discerning about what you buy can help not just the sun bears, but all of the animals and flora of the tropical rainforest. So I'll just get back down off my soapbox there, and we'll go back to our featured bear. One oft-repeated factoid is that sun bears are so named because of the sun-shaped patch on their chest. While this is a nice story, it's not quite accurate, and the true story is even more fascinating. By the way, there'll be links and references to sources in the show notes. So in 1819, Thomas Stamford Raffles, then Governor General of Bencoolen, hope I said that right, a province in southern Sumatra, received a pet sun bear purchased for him from a villager, which he kept for 2 years. Although these bears were then common on the island and common as village pets, the species had not yet been described to science. That pet bear became the basis for the first scientific description of the species and is the only type specimen described from a pet bear. Given the propensity for people to keep them as pets, it's poignantly ironic. So, this is how I imagine Raffles spoke. He was brought up in the nursery with the children, and when admitted to my table, as was frequently the case, gave proof of his taste by refusing to eat any fruit but mangosteens or to drink any wine but champagne. He also described the large heart-shaped spot of white on the breast. Raffles published a paper where he provided the scientific name Ursus melanus, but did not suggest a common name other than Bruang, the local name of the species. Skipping ahead a couple of years, in 1824, Thomas Horsfield provided a fuller description of the species based on another dead specimen from Sumatra that Raffles had forwarded to a museum in England, where he described the chest marking as nearly represented by the letter U. A year later, Horsfield wrote another paper on what he called the Malayan bear from a newly acquired similar-looking specimen of a bear from Borneo. He named this bear Helarctus urspirius, literally meaning sun bear with wide birthmark. He gave it this name because it lived near the hot sun of the equator. And he noted that the bear from the island of Borneo was distinguished from the Sumatra Malay bear by having a more vivid and nearly orange chest patch. So there you go, it's the sun bear that lives near the hot sun of the equator with a wide birthmark. And how OFI came to have sun bears first started in 2008. Desi, a small female, was the first sun bear to arrive at OFI's care centre in 2008, but it had taken several years to reach that point. Previously, Desi was a long-term resident at the old Pangolinbun Zoo, located on the other side of town. She was kept in a concrete pit into which food was unceremoniously tossed. Dr. G was persuaded to visit and encountered Desi, half-covered in mange. Dr. G was horrified at the conditions and vowed to rescue her. The owner wanted to keep Desi, although he showed no particular interest in her as an individual animal in his private zoo. Desi's expressive eyes tell the story of the stress she was put through during the first part of her life. Their exact age is unknown, but estimates like circa 2017, when I wrote this particular little piece, put her at around 20 at the very least. It wasn't until 2007 that Dr. G entered into negotiations to buy the entire zoo, which the owner now wanted to sell. Dr. G went back to North America and raised the $40,000 that was the negotiated price for the zoo. Her first appeal was to PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and PETA raised $6,000. And celebrity actor Goran Vižnić, who ER fans may remember as Dr. Luka, and his wife Ivana contributed more, and the zoo was eventually bought. Upon arrival, Desi's front right paw was examined. It was badly broken and all the claws were missing. Desi still utilises her good paw to climb and tear into logs. As for her right paw, Desi now walks on her wrist where the skin has formed a pad. She still manages to get around, a little slower than other bears, but this doesn't hold her back. Being the first bear to be housed at OFI presented the staff with a variety of new challenges. Her care was different to the orangutans, and OFI staff and volunteers worked hard to ensure her needs were met. To this end, new enclosures were built, and we'll talk about enclosure building in a future episode. Desi was understandably shaken and wary to begin with. Once she was introduced into her new environment, and enrichment such as rotten logs provided, she started to express instinctive bear behaviours. It took some years, but Desi's mood and behaviour improved, and she mellowed towards her caregivers, showing them a gentle affection. Soon enough, more sun bears started to arrive at OFI, and Desi finally had some bear company. An adult female, Hilda, arrived in 2012, and the two bears accepted each other very quickly. Desi has been with Hilda for some years now, and the pair often play together. Desi can be very selective about who she accepts, so once she's welcomed you in, it's for life. One abiding memory of mine that happened one day was when I walked by the enclosure and saw Desi laying on her back with her legs in the air, and she was in the exact same pose that my parents' cat, Thea, often does as well. And following Desi, sun bears started to be taken in at the care centre. While little is known about cub reproduction in the wild, we know cubs are born both blind and hairless and completely dependent on their mother. Over the years, a dozen cubs have been brought to the care centre. The most common reason is because of poaching, as their mothers are murdered for meat and body parts, with the cubs being left behind. People like to keep these small, cute animals as pets, but are not equipped to care for them properly. They're normally confiscated by the Indonesian Forestry Department and given to a rescue centre. An analysis of 71 sun bear seizure records, including their parts and derivatives, showed from 2011 to 2018 a minimum of 254 sun bears represented. These findings showed a relatively high number of bears being kept as pets. And maybe it was just fortuitous, but I've always maintained people end up where they're supposed to be for whatever reason. In the first year I was at OFI, 8 sun bears arrived at the care centre, 3 of which were very young orphan cubs, so I was kept busy. And that's not to mention several of the cubs that were already there when I arrived. And one of the bears that I met on my first day at the care centre was Boo Boo. Small disclaimer, I didn't name her. It's a bit cutesy for me, but, you know, I'm easy. Boo Boo arrived barely a month old, found by the roadside, not far from the care centre. The driver who found her, an OFI staff member, actually thought she was a small cat or dog when he picked her up. She was so tiny. And these vulnerable orphans need round-the-clock care. These bears are hand-reared with milk by the bottle. Typically, 20% of their body weight is needed per day. They're initially kept in a basket, complete with blankets and hot water bottle if necessary. And as happened with me on several occasions when I was caring for some cubs, they'd often climb onto your stomach or curl up next to me for extra security, warmth and comfort. Some also like to sit on my lap as I bottle fed them. Boo Boo also experienced some stomach problems initially, unable to pass food, so the wonderful OFI medical team helped her until she was able to do so on her own. I met Boo Boo when she was 6 months old and effectively took over her care. I also met 2 other female cubs, Shannon and Yogi. They both arrived not long after Boo Boo, brought in by the forestry department. I'll also be referencing 3 other cubs, 2 females named Fitri and Cora, and a male bear named Sunny. Using these as my primary examples, I will go through the rehabilitation process with all its ups and downs. I admit that I learned a lot along the way, made some mistakes, was probably a bit naive, but always did what I thought was best for the bears at the time. Now, obviously, I didn't do all of this alone. I consulted people about what to do, and I worked closely with local staff who put up with my demands and asks, which, again, I'm ever grateful for. Just before we dive into Boo Boo, Shannon, and Yogi, it's important to understand the sun bear rehabilitation process, and it goes something like this. It's all about providing security, choice, and opportunity to thrive. Contact with only a select few people is necessary to prevent the cub from becoming too normalized around humans. If it's a baby, over the first couple of months, they will learn to stand up, wobbling on their hind legs, and learn to walk, initially shuffling forwards and backwards. It's important to let them experience the forest as soon as possible to prevent the cubs from becoming institutionalized. These can be short sessions to begin with, as the young cubs tire easily. As they don't have their mother to teach them how to do things, we humans are the next best thing, but they essentially have to learn by themselves. Sometimes there are cubs of similar ages brought together. Bears are, you know, generally solitary in the wild, but in this situation, socialization is beneficial as they can play with and learn from each other. This helps improve motor skills, brain functions, and keeps them happy. As they start to grow bigger in confidence and strength, the cubs' time in the forest will become longer as well. Their natural curiosity will lead them to dig through the earth, gradually learning how to climb trees and explore. At one point, I did construct a special playground so 2 small cubs, Fitri and Sunny, could spend the majority of their day there playing, and when they were tired, they could climb a tree and sleep up there. They would only be brought inside overnight. Cubs will gradually be moved onto solids, and then after 6 months, and depending on the bear's aptitude and health, we can move them into a bigger sleeping enclosure outdoors. They still receive milk twice a day at this point, and are having daily forest releases. I should stress that each cub is different, and personalities are an indicator of how they may fare in the wild. Some cubs arrive at rescue centres mutilated with claws or teeth removed, and it's immediately clear they need to be looked after long term. Once taken from the wild, it's very hard to put any animal back, as they can get too habituated to humans or be so traumatised they can't be released. So in the wild, cubs stay with their mothers for approximately the first 18 months of their lives, and we try to replicate this with an adoptive mother. When it's deemed suitable, normally when the cub is, you know, nearing 1 year old, a release site is selected and the cub's taken there. Sites are selected by evaluating habitat, if they're large enough to support multiple bears, and history, and the cubs go with their replacement mother or mothers, as you normally have 1 or 2 foster mothers looking after them. And they've formed a bond of trust with the cub. The cubs spend all day in the forest and are placed in a sleeping enclosure overnight. And foster mother and cub stay together until the cub decides it's ready to leave and achieve full autonomy. The presence of the foster parent will keep away any wild bears or other animals as the young cub explore and carve out their own territory. Studies in Sabah, Malaysia, have shown male ranges to be approximately 16 kilometers squared, and female sun bears are approximately 5 to 10 kilometers squared, with a lot of overlap between neighboring bears. Day after day, from early morning to dusk, the foster parent and cub will roam around the forest, returning back to base overnight. Gradually, the cub will become autonomous, going off for days at a time and returning occasionally before they leave for one last time. It's quite an intense process, and I'll cover that in due course. Okay, so now we have an idea of the process, we'll talk about Boo Boo, Shannon, and Yogi. I met Boo Boo and was instantly smitten. We bonded through play and spending time together. Her chest patch was a fiery sunset orange in comparison to like Shannon's creamy chest patch. Boo Boo had been getting walks before I arrived, and she could happily entertain herself in the forest. Showing all the impetuousness of youth, she hopped into muddy puddles with glee. Whenever Boo Boo was happy, her nose crinkled up and she opened her mouth in delight. She loved to explore and follow her nose. Her favourite spots contained several slowly rotting, felled trees which she practiced biting through with her already strong teeth. Beginning to forage as well, she used her nose and long tongue to track down ants. And in the wild, sun bears benefit the forest ecosystem by controlling termite populations as well. Once she found an insect nest, Boo Boo straddled a tree and picked off the insects one by one. She sometimes let them crawl onto her paw and lick them off. Another time she got in over her head, sticking her face into a tree and coming out with ants swarming all over her and frantically rolling around on the floor, pawing away to get them off. Initially housed on her own, Boo Boo was eventually integrated with Shannon. This took some getting used to. Initially, Boo Boo refused to acknowledge Shannon, acting out defensively when approached. After some time, Boo Boo warmed up to Shannon and they began play chasing each other on their daily outings, darting in and out of the ferns trying to catch each other. The pair sometimes became so excited they could hardly contain themselves. Facing each other, they stood up on their hind legs and shook their whole bodies while stretching out both paws like jazz hands. Boo Boo would fall on her back, writhing around on the ground with delight, while Shannon pounced on top of her. Through observing Shannon, Boo Boo became an adventurous tree climber. This skill is good for multiple reasons. She can scale trees to escape predators, or do it just for fun. She showed no fear scaling the tallest trees. When she was ready to come down, she used her long claws to slow her descent before dropping down the last bit. Not a particularly graceful move, but Boo Boo was always too busy enjoying herself to care. It's interesting looking over my notes from the time, as even in the first month, I was establishing my bond with Boo Boo and Shannon and Yogi, as we got them all introduced to one another and taking them out into the forest daily. And we learned how to communicate with each other, smiling when we were happy and letting each other know when we weren't. So Boo Boo and Shannon would give me little but firm bites if, you know, I'd done something they weren't happy with and, you know, they wanted to let me know. I noticed when it rained, or it was about to, that's when Shannon would become particularly excitable and try to play with me and bite on my boots. I remember the signs and gave her a little space on those occasions. Shannon was a funny one, as she used to almost display some kind of displacement behaviour. Say if I had some dog food in my pocket and she wanted it, I'd indicate she couldn't have it and she'd go off, and I knew she was kind of just pretending, as she was coming right back to me after a minute or two to try again. We gradually spent longer and longer out in the forest, and the question of releasing them was at the forefront of my mind. I love forest walks with bears, it's one of my favourite things to do. I love watching them develop, have fun, and just be bears. We got to know and trust each other over the next few months, and it was a happy time. We wandered the forest, and I would find areas for them to test their skills, climb and forage. I'd get down on my hands and knees at times to encourage them to try new things, or sometimes having to eat something myself, or pretend to encourage them to give it a try. Other times I brought a book, and while they climbed up into trees to play or rest, sometimes it could be like an hour or so they're up there, I'd wait for them down at the bottom and have a little read. One point I was reading this heavy tome called Shantaram, which made me feel very self-consciously bohemian. Yeah, the cubs had great spatial memory, sometimes leading me as they knew a route we were taking. They also learned quickly to stick close to me or my fellow bear carer and avoid anyone they didn't know. If I began walking away, I'd hear the rustle of the leaves and sometimes a little cluck sound calling to me as they raced to catch up. Shannon was a friendly, good-natured bear, while Yogi was much more mistrustful. She wouldn't really allow herself to be handled and was not as developed as climbing as the other two. Yeah, but all three, you know, even after some initial wariness, they were solid playmates, and Yogi seemed to be on track, and getting to spend more time in the forest was judged to be best for her development. The three girls really seemed to work as a team, and I remember observing Boo Boo and Shannon working together to fell a tree that they could dig through for insects. As the cubs were all around 1 year of age, we decided, it was time to take them to a release site in the national park, some hours drive from the centre, where someone would stay with them. We did perform health checks on the bears, but we didn't tag or collar any of them. This was due to time and funds, a recurring theme, and questions of how effective they'd be. I'd probably try and do something a bit differently now, but hindsight is 20/20. So I was working alongside a local staff member at the time, and he was going to initially stay in the forest with them. I'd stay back at the care centre as we had three other bears, Featuring, Sunny and Cora, much younger, and they required much more hands-on care. And there were also some other new arrivals that needed attention, so in time, I was going to join him in the forest, and that was the plan. This release site had been previously used to release other cubs successfully, and I was very optimistic and thinking how great everything was going. But I was to learn the hard way. The forest can be a dangerous place for a young cub. All was going smoothly until 2 months in, I got a call one evening. It wasn't clear what had happened, but I knew it wasn't good. I remember the somber drive there. There were stars in the sky until we almost reached the site, where it became dark and overcast, like the stars had turned away from us. Once I arrived, it was clear what had happened. Yogi had been attacked and killed. The attack took place late in the afternoon, early evening. The three cubs were near the camp by themselves, and Boo Boo and Shannon were found up a tree while Yogi was on the ground. She died shortly after. I collected her body and brought her back to the care centre. The marks on her body indicated she struggled and had tried to get away from her attacker, but it was suggested one of the previously released females was responsible for this, but the attack wasn't witnessed, so we can't verify that. She was buried at the care centre. This made me really doubt what we were doing. In my naivety, I thought females were generally safer from attacks by other females. Plus, I thought the previously released females would be amenable to other bears in the area, potentially. I was wrong, and even now, Yogi comes to mind a lot. I wish things could have been different. So not long after this, Shannon's front left paw was injured by a wild bear, or previously rehabilitated bear. So Boo Boo and Shannon were brought back to the care centre. I remember walking with Shannon and Boo Boo from the forest to the spot where we had left the transport cages to bring them back. Boo Boo hung back and didn't want to enter the transport cage, and I don't blame her. So I had to crawl into one of the transport cages and wait for her to join me. And she came in and we sat together for a while, and I made sure she was calm and all right until I was able to extricate myself and close the door. Shannon was given time to recover, and being separated clearly caused distress to both Boo Boo and Shannon, but they were soon reunited and we were all overjoyed at this. You can probably tell I was quite attached to, my bears, as it were. After seeing Boo Boo almost regress a bit when she had been brought back and had to spend time in an enclosure, I resolved the forest life was better for her and what she needed. I was still keen to see if Boo Boo and Shannon could be released. It was that versus life in captivity, and I had long discussions with myself about quality of life versus quantity. But we were able to select another release site, where there hadn't been any bear releases for many years. It was another place in the national park and only accessible by boat. It was also near an established orangutan release site, complete with permanent staff and supplemental feeding area. So we took the two of them there. Again, the situation would be that I'd come back and stay for a while after sorting some other stuff out with other bears. Unfortunately, the other bear carer who was staying there fell ill and had to come back. So I made preparations to visit the release site. In that time, Shannon wasn't seen for 1 week. She then returned to the camp before leaving again, and this was the last time she was sighted. I arrived the day after this, so I just missed her. Shannon was a little older than Boo Boo, and always acted a little more independent than her once in the wild, so I had to hope she was alright. Boo Boo, on the other hand, stayed near the camp area, but rarely approached the staff there. She'd nest in trees near the camp, or rest nearby during the day, and other times she'd disappear off into the forest and they wouldn't see her for a little while. So she'd settled into a nice routine in the area. I remember wandering around the forest one afternoon looking for her and saw no sign of her. But then, later that night, she came back to the camp. I was able to check her over and spend time with her, and she was getting big. Later that night, I went to bed, and I remember I could hear Boo Boo outside for a while. And it was funny, I'd hung my towel up along with other people's clothes to dry, and the next morning when I came out, the towel had actually been taken down, and nothing else had been touched, and the towel was actually several metres away along a boardwalk. And, I hadn't seen anything, but, I just knew it had been Boo Boo. For various reasons, mostly out of my control, I had to leave soon after, and I was actually unable to visit the site again for 6 months. But I got regular reports from staff there. I mean, the release was harder than I would have wished, but since Boo Boo was in the area with staff nearby, I did think this could work. I mean, I wouldn't recommend for every release, but, you know, you have to play the hand you're dealt sometimes. I finally got back out there after many long months and got out the speedboat, walked past the camp towards the forest, and then Boo Boo, she just came out of the forest and just calmly wandered up to me, and then we just sat down together. We then walked about the forest like we'd always done, and my heart was leaping for joy. I mean, this was honestly one of the happiest moments of my life. Seeing her back where she belonged made it all worthwhile, and she seemed to be just doing all right. It was then sitting in this area where, you know, orangutans, bears, and people were happily and peacefully coexisting that I also thought back to the Vinshuti Wildlife Sanctuary and the Magic Circle, which is, again, its own special and unique place. And yeah, it's not like you could replicate this everywhere, but it was just nice knowing there was somewhere in the world like this. Boo Boo was still being sighted a year later in the camp vicinity and looking healthy. Assistants reported seeing what they believed to be a wild male near the area also at this time. So Boo Boo would have been around 2.5 years old when she was last confirmed to have been seen, and this is past the age of independence and possibly nearing the age of sexual maturity. It was different to how I envisioned these things going, but he responded to the situation as it developed, and obviously this was some years ago now, and I want to hope she's still living a long and fulfilling life and contributing to the ecosystem, but if not, I think she had a better life than most sun bears, wild and free, and each day was a win. I did take lessons learned going forward. I am more cautious about releases, especially when it comes to male bears, particularly as any attempt at a male cub release that I've known about in central Kalimantan hasn't worked out. Male sun bears are very territorial, and I absolutely did not want to release the male sun bear, Sunny. I didn't think it was right for him, and after Yogi, I just did want to see that happen again. I focused on getting a space and a nice forest enclosure for him. Cora, another previously mentioned female, wasn't suitable for release either. Fitri, the female cub, on the other hand, I had complete faith in. She was great at foraging. I mean, at one time I recall we came across an area filled with acorns on one of our forest walks, and Fitri and Sunny loved eating there. So we revisited there often. She was also great at sniffing out ants and termites, and from the first day she arrived at the care centre, even at such a young age, Fitri impressed all of us with her climbing skills. Long story short, we deemed she was suitable for release, and we selected a spot. Again, hadn't had any bear releases for many years, but did have a holding cage that we could keep Fitri in overnight, and we took her out there. I and local staff would take turns in sitting with her at night, as she sometimes cried out when left alone and, you know, helped her get used to the new situation. Aside from that, she was a natural. Again, we were near to an orangutan release site, so we saw some of them around. It's quite something to see a cheek-padded male orangutan, like, flee in, like, what, like terror from this tiny little cub. And, yeah, the area we released her in also had these lovely, great, big old trees as well. COVID happened not long after this, which prevented me from really getting back to her for any updates, and I heard that Fitri disappeared about 4 months after release. But, seemingly miraculously, 6 months later, you know, she randomly appeared at the camp, looking in good health, and I've got photos of it to prove it. Yeah, she proved her independence and, I guess, was where she was supposed to be. I'll take the win. I've since helped raise quite a few orphan cubs, but haven't, as of recording, been involved in releasing any more back to the wild. I always find it hard to shake off the feeling of imposter syndrome when it comes to this. I mean, I feel lucky to have had the chance to do these things and taken the opportunities presented to me. I mean, this all came off the back of sending an inquiring email. So I'm always like, if I can do it, anyone can. I'm just happy that at least Boo Boo and Fitri had made themselves a home back in the wild where they should be and where they never should have been taken from. Those individual sun bears' lives matter. All of them. They deserve the chance to be free. They're important. They mean something to themselves, something to me, and something to everyone who met them. I did write a report on the success of bear releases in central Kalimantan over the preceding decade, including ones prior to my arrival, and collated some of my thoughts on bear releases generally, which I'll share bits of here, as I think it's important to reflect on how this all went and what can be learned. Reading the results depends on how we measure success, so parameters I devised to measure this include that individuals reach the age where they would be independent of their mother, they've had time to establish a home range and they've been seen for at least a year post-release. Using these parameters means Boo Boo and Featuree's releases can be moderately termed successful, with Yogi and Shannon being unsuccessful, or in Shannon's case, at best, inconclusive. Assessing the bear's personality can help indicate how they fared in the wild, with questions involving topics such as temperament, relationship to caregiver, relationship to other bears and humans, and climbing and foraging ability. A sun bear's life in the wild is almost constantly filled with foraging for fruits and termites. A strange, unfamiliar bear can get chased out of the ranges of wild bears that do not want to share. If this process continues, it's logical to assume these bears will eventually end up at the forest edge and come into contact with humans. Cubs that have no fear or are habituated to humans may not run away and return to these areas where food is. These are then the crop raiders and pests that humans complain about and give the rest of the population a bad name. So you have to consider, are these releases beneficial to the population as a whole? Are these releases putting a strain on resources? An issue raised during these releases is overcrowding. If too many bears are released at one site, then it has a negative impact on the chances of individual survival and on the wild population also. The fight for resources can become a desperate one, and finding a suitable location and establishing it can handle an additional bear is paramount to a release's success. It should be noted the fires of, say, like 1997 to 98, 2015 and 2019 in Kalimantan have not helped foraging activity. In these times, the number of sun bears seen nearer human settlements has risen. Human-bear conflicts are likely linked to the reduction in forest habitat. Indications are that when forced by habitat destruction, bears will venture into less safe areas hunting for food. So Shannon had 4 months in one location to adapt to a life in the wild, but only a short time, approximately 1 month, in the second release location. The fact that she was attacked by a wild bear in the past may have made her more alert going forward. Previously socialized cubs may not understand the rules in the wild and can approach wild bears unaware of the dangers they face. Shannon's return to the second camp after 1 week by herself is somewhat encouraging, but since her main rehabilitators, who she was familiar with, were not present at this time, this may also have been a factor in Shannon's disappearance. Also, if food was left out overnight, it's possible she returned unobserved. Obviously, employing a bit of optimism and conjecture, it's possible she'd found an area to establish a territory, but this does remain unclear. Some may argue every day in the wild forest is a win or success for the individual. If the alternative is life in a small cage, it can be argued to be worth the efforts. It may be a relatively short life, with the odds stacked against them, but could be a more meaningful life compared to a long life, sometimes 30 years in captivity. It must be considered if releasing the cubs is in the individual's best interests, and if it's good for the species as a whole. Release of a sun bear cub is a lengthy process and fraught with many obstacles. The chances of it being successful and going well are quite low. But females appear to have a better chance of survival, based on my limited results. Pairing young bears together help them both learn motor and cognitive skills, but a location may only be able to support a finite number of bears at once. Just releasing one bear instead of a multiple can help increase survival chances. If the area of forest is known to have wild bears, one bear may be able to manage to fit in with initial help from humans. The bears need time to establish a home range, so having a strong bond between rehabilitator and cub appears to lead to a better chance of long-term success. Otherwise, an empty forest could potentially accommodate multiple bears. It's a big commitment, rehabilitating a cub, requiring someone for at least 2 years to act as a surrogate. Not just bear, but human physical and mental well-being must be taken into account as well. It is difficult living in a remote location without an already established camp or human presence. And if the cub ends up dead after a matter of months, this can be very disheartening and may lead some to question if it's worth the effort. You know, as long as organizations accept sun bear cubs, they'll need to provide for them either in captivity or in rehabilitation. Releases must be assessed on a case-by-case basis. If the bear is to be kept in captivity, then facilities need to be appropriately funded and constructed. This ideally would be a nice forest enclosure where the bear can live as happy and wild a life as possible. These were my thoughts at the time, and I broadly still agree, but I'm always open to learn more and do things differently if it works. It's also worth mentioning as well, there are other sun bear rehabilitation attempts happening and have happened around Indonesia, some of which we will hear in future episodes. There is also a release program in Malaysian Borneo as well, This is at the Bornean Sun Bear Conservation Centre in Sabah, Malaysia, and they have their own protocols that they follow. So, well done, if you've made it this far. I've said a lot, and there's so much more I could say. And it's not all doom and gloom. As I said, we'll hear about other rehab efforts in Indo, and learn about sun bears as well as we go along. Over the next few episodes, I'm looking forward to showcasing some of the amazing people who are making a difference out in Indonesia, and some you may not have heard of. So in the next episode, Femke Den Haas, founder of Jakarta Animal Aid Network, aka Jan, is joining me in the, well, you could say the Bruang Den, and she's going to be discussing her work. She's been described as one of the most effective activists in Indonesia, and we'll hear not just about bears that Jan has rescued, but all sorts of animals, including dolphins, dancing monkeys, birds, and so much more. It will also help paint a bigger picture about Indonesian wildlife as well. I mean, it's an amazing biodiversity hotspot, after all. So yeah, thank you for your indulgence. If you have any questions or thoughts, be they agreeable or challenging what I've said, please feel free to reach out. Otherwise, we'll see you next time. I'm Philip Stubbley. This is The Bear Den. Bye for now. The Bear Den, the American Bear Association podcast, was written and presented by me, Philip Stubbley. The music was composed by React Music. Thank you to everyone who has helped make this podcast possible, including Karen Hausman, Bill Lee, Clary Lee, Stephanie Horner, Donna Brazinka, Ross Coyer, and Angie Page. Special thanks to Noor Sheikh for fact-checking, reviewing, and, you know, providing general notes on this episode. You can find out more about Orangutan Foundation International at orangutan.org. You can find out more about the American Bear Association at americanbear.org. You can find Vinshuti Wildlife Sanctuary on Facebook and Instagram. You can ask questions and submit comments about the podcast to peacewb@americanbear.org. The ABA is a special circumstance. We do not condone feeding wild animals. If you enjoy this podcast, help support the ABA, either by donating, becoming an ABA member, symbolically adopting a bear, or come visit the sanctuary during the season and say hello. And if you do enjoy this, please do us a favour. It'll barely take you a minute. On whatever platform you're listening to this on, please either follow us or click the bell for updates and notifications. Please share with family and friends and rate the podcast, as it all helps us grow and is greatly appreciated.